The translator jabbered at the headman for a while, and he looked stricken. Then Nizam beckoned me over. "Easy, old fellow," he said. "As you say, Your Excellency." He rode forward, beckoning me alongside. I felt the need to explain myself further. "I do not believe one Gorgon will do for us. In fact, I do believe we will do for it."
"It is not that which concerns me," said the ruler of the small mountain kingdom. "But go easy on the headman. The monster was his wife."
We rode the rest of the way in reflective silence to the valley where the monster had built her retreat, the only noises the sighing of wind, the thudding of hooves, and the jingling of our kits.
"There is a cave halfway up the wall of the valley here," said the messenger who had summoned us. "She lives there, coming out at times to drink and forage for food. The villagers left her meals at first, but in her madness she slew one of them, and then they stopped."
Such tragic neglect is unknown in England, where the poor victims of this most hideous ailment are confined in mazed bedlams upon their diagnosis, blindfolded, lest they kill those who nurse them. But what more can one expect of the half-civilized children of the Valley Kingdoms here on the top of the world? The execution, for want of a better word, proceeded about as well as such an event can, which is to say that it was harrowing and not by any means enjoyable in the way that hunting game can be. At the entrance to the small canyon where the woman had made her lair, we paused. I detailed Sergeant Singh to ready a squad of rifles. Their guns loaded, they took up positions in the rocks, ready to beat back the monster should she try to rush us. Having thus prepared our position, I dismounted and, joining the mater, steeled myself to enter the Valley of Death. I'm sure you have read lurid tales of the appalling scenes in which Gorgons are found. Charnel houses strewn with calcined bodies, bones protruding in attitudes of agony from the walls as the mad men and mad women who slew them gibber and howl among their victims. These tales are, I am thankful to say, constructed out of whole cloth by the fevered imaginations of the degenerate scribblers who write for the penny dreadfuls. What we found was both less and much worse than that. We found a rubble-strewn valley, in one side of it a cave, barely more than a cleft in the rock face, with a tumble-down awning stretched across its entrance. An old woman sat under the awning, eyes closed, humming to herself in an odd sing-song. The remains of a fire lay in front of her, logs burned down to white-caked ashes. She seemed to be crying, tears trickling down her sunken, wrinkled cheeks. The mater gestured me to silence, then, in what I only later recognized as a supremely brave gesture, strode up to the fire.
"Good evening to you, my aunt, and it would please me that you keep your eyes closed, lest my guards be forced to slay you of an instant," he said.
The woman kept up her low, keening croon, like a wail of grief from one who has cried until her throat is raw and will make no more noise, but her eyes remained obediently shut. The mater crouched down in front of her.
"Do you know who I am?" he asked gently.
The crooning stopped.
"You are the Royal One,"
she said, her voice a cracked whisper.
"They told me you would come."
"Indeed I have," he said, a compassionate tone in his voice. With one hand he waved me closer.
"It is very sad what you have become."
"It hurts,"
she wailed quietly, startling the soldiers so that one of them half rose to his feet. I signaled him back down urgently as I approached behind her.
"I wanted to see my son one more time."
"It is all right, aunt," he said quietly. "You'll see him soon enough."
He held out a hand to me. I held out the leather bag, and he removed the mirror.
"Be at peace, aunt. An end to pain is in sight."
He held the mirror at arm's length in front of his face, above the fire before her.
"Open your eyes when you are ready for it."
She sobbed once, then opened her eyes. I didn't know what to expect, dear Nelly, but it was not this. Somebody's aged mother, crawling away from her home to die with a stabbing pain in her head, surrounded by misery and loneliness. As it is, her monarch spared her the final pain, for as soon as she looked into the mirror, she changed. The story that the Gorgon kills those who see her by virtue of her ugliness is untrue. She was merely an old woman. The evil was something in her gaze, something to do with the act of perception.